Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be, whatever time of day it is for you. You are tuned in to the twice monthly show called Culture in Motion, art, politics, entertainment, activism, music, all these things intersect on the show. I'm Mike Crenshaw. My co-host, Ryan Danley, is here. What's up, Ryan?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. So we're Ryan.
How's this week treating you?
I've been out here in Sisters, Oregon at the Caldera Arts Camp on a writing retreat, and that's been beautiful. It's always good to be able to spend some time and center creativity, get away from the distractions, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I've had a bunch of Hard Times articles to write this week, and that's been good. It's been keeping my head sort of like focused and, you know, keeping my mind pitching stuff, you know, just keeping the brain, the synapses relays bumping as opposed to just darker, you know. So
right. Yeah, unfortunately you're because you're in a rural location, you're coming in and out. But I'm sure people are used to this kind of thing in the COVID reality. So but hey, we got a very special guest today. We have my man Mac Smith. What's up, Mac?
What's going on, Mike?
Oh man, I'm chilling, but things aren't very chill in the city. I wanted to have you on because you've been such a powerful voice of leadership and clarity. You're a journalist, a systems analyst. What else would you like to say to our listeners about who you are and what you do?
You know, for me, like you said, I'm a systems analyst by trade. I definitely do journalism work, you know, through reporting and editing for We Out Here magazine. I throw concerts, you know, thesis is kind of my baby out here in Portland. And then I do security, private security. I'm a father of four. I'm a husband. I'm a gardener. I'm just a regular guy that's out here working. I'm an activist when the time calls.
So you said you're just a regular guy, but it sounds to me like you're hyper regular. you're extraordinary.
I do a lot of regular things.
I feel you. You do a ton of regular things. So being downtown at the Justice Center, being around, some people might be familiar with you because you've been on the news. You've been on CNN. You've been in New York Times, Rolling Stone. Was there a planned trajectory that you imagined when you started getting involved in these recent Black Lives Matter protests?
You know, no. Actually, I was really planning on staying low. That was kind of a funny thing. But I got arrested and I got doxxed. And, you know, being a Black man in Portland, you can only do so much when you work at corporate worlds and you work with a lot of whiteness. And it's very easy to get lost in the narrative. Oh, he was arrested. Now we have to make this a public thing type of thing. So once that happened, I did make a small effort to make sure that if people were going to see me going big, that they were going to see me go big. And so I gave a couple of speeches that were pretty impassioned, and that that caused a few people in news to start reaching out to me. I didn't really realize it until I was on CNN and all that, that it was becoming a thing. But the goal issue, you know, so it was really to just stay low and keep on pushing from behind on defunding the police and keep on, you know, putting that in people's ears and making sure that they were aware that, making Black Lives Matter does actually have a plan in place, and this is where it starts.
You've been down there for, what are you going down, 5, 6, 7 nights a week?
Probably 5 nights is a solid. 5 nights is a solid angle, yep. Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed any of the ebbs and flows going down there? Because as of right now, it feels like it's, from the video that I'm seeing from the people that I'm with or know down there, seems like it's actually like getting more hostile. It hasn't like kind of like mellowed out at all. Is that what you're seeing? Or
I would say it's been hostile the whole time. there's never really been a point where it hasn't been hostile. When we first started going out, you know, it was tear gas and physical attacks. When the feds came, it was munitions firings and a lot of gas and physical attacks and kidnappings. And now it's still just physical attacks and bear mace and pepper spray and that kind of stuff. You know, a lot of beatings and arrests. So I would say it's been hostile the whole time. What has changed a bit is that you've got the element of white supremacists openly, involving themselves and creating skirmishes on the ground, and that I think is new, but it's been long expected. So,
what do you think about the? I mean, some people sense that there's almost like a passive aggressive retaliatory role that the police are actively participating in terms of not really doing anything about vigilante violence. Some people would even go so far as to say that the disbanding of the city's gang task force or whatever the firearm, you know, the unit that was supposed to,
whatever it was called,
that's in a way retaliation for the narrative that's being held by Black Lives Matter. You got any thoughts on that?
That's exactly what it is. I mean, leadership rolls downhill. Ted Wheeler is a passive person. He allows things to go on as they do. And what did he just say in the quote today in the paper, that he believes that things will burn themselves out? You know, that, what does that even mean? It's going to burn itself out. Eventually, right. They'll just get tired of beating each other up, and then we'll just call it a truce. Like, then we're back where we started, you know?
Right,
you know
what I mean? Right.
That's a strategy for somebody who has no idea what to do.
Yeah. It's not a house of cards.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. This house, it's just going to burn itself down. It's cool. Like,
No big deal. It'll figure itself out. Whatever. Someone will die and it'll stop. I don't know.
Right,
you know,
right.
He doesn't really have any. And so the cops are not being passive, because this is about them. So they are actively getting involved in protests that are about them, and actively ignoring protests, despite how violent, you know, despite all the violence at them that are occurring in their favor. So that's just very observational. I was out this list and had their Unite the Right rally or whatever downtown with the bunch. I was down there, and, you know, the federal agents at one point came out and the Lives Matter group. They guarded them. They created a perimeter around them and created a police a tape line and wouldn't let journalists or anyone through. And then when the crowd got big enough, they let all the white supremacists out the back way through the tape, escorted them out one by one. And then they proceeded to have the Portland police use the LRAD to announce that this was now in legal assembly. After all the opponents were gone, it was just us in the park celebrating. And then they came and charged us out and arrested a couple people and beat a few people up. I don't know how else to say this is coordinated than to...
It's like the veil is so thin at this point that it's not even...
There was never even a veil. I mean, right. There was a pretend veil, like there was like a shower curtain and people were pretending they couldn't see through it. Right. And now there's like the shower curtain is raised and it's like, well, what did you expect? You know, the steam is in there, you know?
Did you see the Portland Police Bureau's response to that? Where they basically just said, like, their official statement is absolutely insane, that they feel like they've been the victim for so long here that they didn't feel like it was their place to get involved, and, like, you know, so they have to take those things in consideration. I mean, it was really like, I mean, so outwardly saying that, like, we're going to support, like, you know, far right factions because basically we don't have to worry about it.
Honestly, I'm glad. Just say it. Just say it.
Right.
Just say it. Now it's out there. Now we all know. Now it's in the Washington Post. Like, well, the Portland police are cooperating. I mean, like, what else is there? It's just what it is. Just go ahead and say it. And they've said it now. So I'm happy they did that. I think it was a huge misstep on their part. And I think that they had the confidence to think that would fly. But I think that they're going to see a lot different.
Yeah. I'm curious about what the future holds. I think, you know, Minneapolis was pushing for various degrees of defunding. And a lot of liberal kind of interference kind of took the teeth out of what they were talking about there Yeah. Do you see the movement and the push to defund the police here as something that can sustain until it actually happens? I mean, I know that being a proponent of it, you have to stay on task, stay on purpose, stay on message. Do you have any skepticism?
Always skepticism, but I think this is a pretty strong movement, and I think that we really are on task and on point, you know, on point about getting this done. There's already discussions about the second phase of this, how the protest turns into actual work on the ground, how it's already turning to actual work on the ground, how it's actually turning to progress in organization, you know, community defense. The police have stopped doing their job locally. Period.
That's evident.
Period. I mean, they're done. Even during the day, I had a motorcycle on my street today going up and down the block, going 60 miles an hour in a residential area, just going around in the circles until all the neighbors just came out of the house and walked to his house and said, "Dude, stop. We're already there."
What was his response?
All right, don't jump on me. You know? He was a bad boy until about 8 of us pulled up, like, "Look, man, my kids are trying to sleep, bro. What are you doing out here?" You know what I mean? That's what I was doing about an hour ago. That's what we were doing. We all just rolled up spontaneously. The whole neighborhood showed up at his house like, "Dog, this ain't gonna fly, bro." No. But, you know, but that's already where we are. People, and nobody called the cops. We just walked up, man. Like, look, community's gonna be on it. But this is where we are kind of getting to. The revolution's already here. You know, this protest is really just a front for what's really happening. We have to keep the pressure on the police and keep the police on their toes. We have to. But in reality, we also have to, at the same time, we also have to do the work. So it's like when you said earlier, you know, you do a lot of regular stuff. That's cool. Everybody can do a lot of regular stuff. And so, you know, it's the regular stuff that we need to do, you know, to free ourselves from the clutches of the police and really the police at the beginning, you know, it's to destroy this crux of involuntary caretakers, you know, who decide what we eat and what we watch and how we police take care of each other. So I think that, you know, as we work toward this process of giving the power back to the people, people are going to realize that this was just an opening salvo.
Wow. Right on, man. Yeah, I've been inspired by the almost 100 days, you know, and Portland being in the spotlight, you know, every time I watch headlines, Portland is mentioned in some way, shape, or form. I think that there are people outside of the city that are observing this that don't have an informed view. One of the narratives that is so cliche, but we have to discuss it here because it's part of the discourse, is a narrative around white people hijacking a movement, and people questioning the legitimacy because there are a lot of white bodies that they see when they observe what's happening in Portland. What do you have to say about that?
I think the people will say anything to try and separate the team.
Right.
Whatever you could say, whatever optically makes sense, you're just gonna say it, and then it becomes our job to try and prove it untrue. The hugest thing I think is that people outside of here don't even understand why we're in the streets. This is a local budget issue. We are mad because the police are severely overfunded and they are wasting our money, and when we complain they start beating us up. Why would we go home? This has nothing to do, I mean, sure, Black Lives Matter, we got in the streets and all that because everyone got in the streets and everyone is protesting, then we're going to protest. And when we said, hey, it's a budget issue here, we need to deal with this, the cops started kicking our ass. Excuse me, it started kicking our behinds. And that being said, that's what our protest is about. It's about our collective citizens of all races and genders and everything else all getting beat because the police don't want to come up off of a few $10 million, $50 million, $100 million. They're like, no, we'll kill you first. And so we're like, we can't go home. That's not what the police are for. The police aren't for deciding if they get paid or not by beating us up. That's not how that works. That's not how democracy works. The cops don't get to just beat you up for complaining about them. So we have to stay in the streets until there's a change. And the change it occurs by taking away this money that they have. I think in the first big speech I gave, I spoke about how on the day I got arrested, the police car I was in drove around, and they had satellite information going straight to the police cars that was tracking individuals and group sizes. Why do they even have that?
Right.
Why do they even have that? They just have stuff just to use it, and then excuses to use it. On one night, they said that they spent $20,000 on tear gas. The Portland police, not the feds, spent $20,000 on tear gas in one night.
Wow.
Why do we even have that much tear gas?
Well, and it's like schools don't even have what? You know what I mean? And like that all comes out of the general budget, right? You know what I mean? Like, so like,
where are we at? You know what I mean? This is what it comes down to. There is no public safety. We don't even have a hospital anymore. We have OHSU. It's a college. You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing? But the cops are getting $250 million a year.
Man.
Something's got to give. You know what I mean? So the impetus for us being in the streets has less to do with race here than it has in a lot of other places. The fact that Black Lives Matter is really a function of what's happening nationwide. But in reality, our issue here is not just limited to the death of Black people. It's really about police overreach in general in this city. So the overtures that are made in other places are not going to quell us here. It's just a different situation. And this city is a place that is really dealing with rampant unemployment, with rampant poverty, with rampant homelessness, and now with rampant evictions, as well as cars and vehicles being taken back as we speak during a pandemic. So the impetus for folks to be on the street is not, it doesn't take all that much. And really what we're asking for is for our government to fix the society. So fixing the society will fix the problem, will stop the protests. It's just A and B math. They just keep on ignoring, you know, they just keep on tucking the card of fixing things. Fix the problems.
So the it seems to me.
Yeah, I drove through on Burnside a couple days ago. Go ahead, Mike.
It seems to me that there's an issue of what gets prioritized, and you know, I can definitely see the connection between the prioritization of protection of private property over the value of people's lives, and so therefore the police budget is something that to us it looks like it's disproportionate. You know, it looks grossly exaggerated as far as what's needed. But if you think about it in terms of what's actually happening and the results of what's happening, people are losing resources. People are losing wealth, and wealth is being consolidated and extracted from people.
It's a fact. I look at the simple explanation that I'm over here now on MLK at this little office working. But if I go down to Vancouver or Williams, I'm gonna see dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of empty apartments just sitting there. Nobody's renting them. There's no one for them. They can't afford them if they could, right? Meanwhile, if I go a few blocks further down toward Unthank, there's dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of tents of people just living there in the streets. And the police are gonna go and deal with the people in the tents. And dealing with them does not mean I'm gonna put them in the apartments. It means I'm gonna stick them in a jail cell for it. And then if someone has the audacity to try and sit in one of them apartments and they haven't paid for it, I'm gonna arrest that person too. So the protection of property, you know, when you think about it in a state like this where you have 60% of the crime response is a response to homeless situations, and we have a rampant empty homes, buildings, abandoned this, abandoned that, empty land, open land, and the people aren't allowed to live anywhere. What are we doing? What are the police even protecting? They're just protecting a way of life that no one's even dealing with. It's just, these are empty homes.
Right.
These are empty buildings.
Right.
And so it's the emphasis is put on these. And so in these protests, when you see these people are setting, like, you know, a garbage bin on fire in front of a police station, it's really a demonstration to say, watch, they'll all come. Mm. They'll come and claim a pre-alarm fire. like this garbage pail was going to set the Hatfield Courthouse, a 30-story concrete building, was going to bring you to the ground. This garbage can, this M80, was going to bring you to the ground. You know what I mean? And but the cop will come out and gas an entire 1,000 people over this.
Right.
You know, right. It's when you talk about the protection of property over people, you really have to think about what that means. Like, it really means, like, I'll kill these people to protect this building, but I could just build again. Or right. I could, and that's not even in danger.
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah. at the Multnomah County records thing, someone threw like a rock through the window and threw like a piece of burning toilet paper through or something. They acted like it was a 4-alarm fire.
Right.
The sprinklers came on and knocked it out in minutes.
Right.
I came around the corner, the fire was already out. I couldn't even get a picture of it. It was that quick. You know, but it was the front page of the news.
Right.
Front page of the news.
I think the best way I've seen it described lately is they say, if you really want to know how this works, steal $100 from your register at work or watch your paycheck get shorted $100. And see how each situation's handled. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's the same thing. On one is, oh, our bad, we'll get you next week. On the other hand, yeah, it's you're fired. You know what I mean? So right. It's like,
and you're in jail, you know?
And all this is atop a severe imbalance of power. Mm-hmm. Like, the police are literally allowed to just beat us up and walk away.
Right.
They don't even have to arrest us. They just beat us up and walk away. We can't go and strike an officer. The impact.
I saw some footage of
them. We're going to jail, for real jail, staying in jail, bail too high to pay bail, just jail. You know what I mean? It's different. Right. The cops just do it and walk off every night.
Right.
The same 12, 15, 30 officers.
And they get paid well to do it.
And they're getting paid well to do it.
Mm.
And if they retire at the end of this year, all that overtime is going to go into their purse account.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So we're out here fighting an uphill battle, and it's not for fun. It's for justice. Like, that's why I was telling the cops the other day, like, you guys are here for checks. We're out here for justice.
Mm-hmm.
How long can you keep it going?
Right.
When you stop needing them checks, are you still going to be out here? Because I'm still going to be out here.
Mm.
Mm.
That's why we win.
Right. And, you know, being somebody that's Black, you know, I heard you talk about your ethnic identity in the different places that you come from, that might not be, people might not be aware of. But that said, the way you show up, you're going to get treated like a Black man in America. And looking at the history of what happens to people who take an effective stand, where do you sit with, you know, ideas around personal safety? And consequences of being in the position that you're in?
You know, my parents, I'm lucky to have parents that taught us that you have to do what's right. You know, there's a cost to everything. You know, I believe in God personally. You know, I believe in Allah Almighty, you know. And our time comes when our time comes. You know what I mean? Like, that man yesterday in Kenosha got shot 7 times in the back. That man's right. Still with us.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not, I mean, he should be dead by all accounts. His spine should be severed. You know, his spine should be severed. His intestines should be blown through his stomach, should be damaged. His kidney should be, he's here. And he's in stable condition now. This hasn't even been 24 hours. You know what I mean? This man is making it back. So I look at my safety in regards to I'm careful, I'm alert, I make sure I'm doing what I need to do to ensure that my family is not targeted and whatnot. But at the same time, we're very alert. We're very aware of what threats are, and we're very prepared, and we have been. Because again, my parents raised me to always know that you have to do what's right. So I've grown up and raised my kids to know that we have to do what's right, and that we have to be prepared for the backlash that sometimes comes with that. You know, being a hero or whatever is never the goal. You know, the goal is to exert your courage when you have a chance to. You know, right. I go out there every day. Sometimes, I get the stomach bubbles just parking the car. Right. I got to hit a few blocks to go and see what's going on. Hope I don't get hit in the head with ammunition again, come or on. Something else and knock me the hell out.
Right.
You know, so it's It's not like I just to go out there happy-go-lucky, know what's going on. I know what's going on. I know what's going on around me. I'm watching people. I know who's watching me. I'm watching the feds watching me. I'm watching the police watching me. I'm watching the white supremacists check me out. But at the same time, I feel like I've been able thus far to still assert my truth. And it has come with cost already. But, you know, it's not a... If you want to be the boss, you got to pay the cost, right? So it's nothing that I wasn't prepared for or expecting to see. You know, hopefully this is all over soon and I can just get back in my garden and disappear and go back to like regular social media presence, you know. But right now it's popping, so it's what it is.
Right on, man. I'm grateful you're out there, bro. I really appreciate your presence. And like I said, your clarity, man, because it's there are a lot of people who are going to look at things and look for disorganization. They're going to look for a lack of leadership. They're going to look for a lack of clarity. But whenever you frame the message, you know, I feel like people can emerge with the understanding that's informed. I think, you know, I'm also a little bit, and you can weigh in on this too, Ryan. I'm unfortunately a little bit skeptical because I feel that the thing that happened in Kenosha, the things that continue to happen, things that happen in Arizona, you know, because this private property protection agency, because of white supremacy, we're going to continue to see police murdering people. The good part about that, if there is anything to say positive, is that people are going to continue to be inspired. People are going to continue to be radicalized and reinvigorated. So I don't see the struggle going away anytime soon, is what I'm saying.
And that's the big thing is, you know, there's a lot of people right now, you know, local politics and whatnot, that are pushing for the police reform. They're pushing for police, you know, revised police oversight. It's all good and dandy, man, but like, let's just be 100% about it. Like, the cops aren't going to stop shooting people for the reasons you just mentioned. They're not going to stop. Like, they don't have the propensity to stop. It's not even that they don't, it's not, I don't believe that any cop goes out their house like, I'm going to kill one of these guys today. I don't think that happens. But the setup that they're in and the situations that they're constantly put in that they're not even trained to be in and don't even need to be in. I mean, a lot of these shootings are situations where we're seeing the cop never needed to be there. They shot that man on the ground a couple of years ago. He was sitting down trying to help an autistic kid and they shot him on the ground. Like, they just he didn't even need to be there. They could have sent a nurse. The dude that got shot in Kenosha, it was a domestic situation. It's people arguing and the cops came out with guns and shot the man. Like, people argue, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's gonna happen. Like, but why can't you send up the right people? And that's what this whole thing is about. It's not about hating the police. The people hate the police because the police be beating them up and hurting them. But if you just took the police out of the equation, there wouldn't be that hate. This hate is a response. And we're not trying to operate out of hate out here. We're trying to operate out of the freedom of our people, out of the want and the need and the love of our people, you know, to be free. So that's like an important thing to me, and part of the reason I'm on the ground often is because I want to make sure that people are remembering that. I want to make sure that I'm able to say, as much as I'm not going to police any protests or tell anyone how to do things or how angry to be, don't let the anger and the hate be the driver of your actions. Let your actions be driven by the love and the intentions that you hold. The anger might go ahead and give you some extra wind. It might give you a little nose boost, but you can't just stick rocket fuel in your car all day and drive around like that. That ain't no good for you, bro.
I've tried it for a long time. I don't know.
You know, you just got to temper that anger. You know, you have to temper that and use it when it's useful, but you have to not have to put it back in your pocket and recenter yourself. And so I try to be on the ground to help people recenter and remember what it is that we're here for and how our actions can help to lead to that goal. Because it could just be one action at any time that puts us over, that pops us through the bubble, you know?
Real talk, man. I want to thank you for joining us on Culture Emotion, Mac. Thank you, Ryan. And thank you for listening and tuning in. And we'll see y'all in a couple weeks.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Peace.
listening to KBOO Portland. Do you believe in the power of community radio? Then show your support by donating to KBOO today. We have a fundraising goal of $80,000, and we need listeners like you to help us get there. Show your support for non-commercial, people-powered community radio by going to KBOO.org.